The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week of every month of every year, for longer than most of you can remember, we've been bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today is question and answer week. Normally that would be the second Wednesday of the month, but because last week's guest was not available this week, we just flip-flopped it. Y'all didn't even notice, did you? Up until I said, it's normally the second week of the month. You guys were all like, it's good, question and answer week, whatever, because you don't know. It's all good. Anyway, question and answer week is the week where there's no planned topic. It's just, what are you needing to know this week? There's a couple ways to reach me here at the station. One is to call in at our, I don't even know why we call it a toll-free number anymore. There's no such thing as a toll number anymore. We all get charged the same, like we call it anywhere in the world, and we get charged exactly the same. It's not like when I was a kid and I wasn't allowed to call my friends from camp because long distance was 25 cents a minute on our dial-up landline. So we'll just call it, you know, the number, 877-772-9658, 877-772-9658. The first cell phone I ever owned, it was 80 cents a minute to talk on it, and it was in a giant bag that you had to carry on your shoulder, like would not fit in your pocket. It looked like one of those army phones from Korea where they would like call in the helicopters. It was like that in a bag. 877-772-9658, or you can text us, actually, at 513-201-8249, 513-201-8249, or the favorite way seems to be send an email, and because I think some people are like still at work, especially if they're listening to us in Central Time or west of that. The email address is vinaradio@gmail.com, and we'll just get through as many questions as we possibly can. Generally, the phone gets the priority. So, because, you know, we don't want you hanging on that phone at 25 cents a minute because you're calling from Florida or Nashville or wherever. So, again, 877-772-9658. Text is 513-207-8249 or vinaradio@gmail.com. So while we're waiting for the questions to start rolling in, as I know they are going to do, a couple of quick things happening this week, which is unusual. We don't usually have a whole bunch going on after like the third week of the month, other than the usual focus groups at Cincinnati RIA. Thursday night, we have two different free pop-up things going on that are... luckily, they're back-to-back, so I guess I don't see a lot of people needing to go to both of these, but if you do, you can actually go to both of them. The first one is the Nothing But Notes focus group, which is an ongoing focus group, been going on for years, but is usually closed to everybody except RIA, GC, and CORE members, is actually open to the public this week only, and the reason is that the topic... is hypothecations. Now, if you're not a note person, you're like, what a? If you're a note person, you understand why that is a super important topic to be talking about. It's basically a loan against a loan. And what we don't want is for people to be investing in hypothecations who don't understand what they are or how to like protect your money, like anything. Like if you're making a loan on a house, you'd have things in place to protect your money. You'd have a mortgage, you'd have a note, you'd have title insurance, you'd have property insurance. There's too many people who don't know what they need in place on a hypothecation to protect their money. So opening that one up to the public. Now for that one, you're going to have to go to CoreRocks.com to register. CoreRocks.com, because that's the one in which it's open to the public. Also, that same night, right after that, Jerry Fink is doing a hour and a half long. It's basically like fundamentals of accounting for real estate investors, because it's tax time. And a lot of people are starting to realize that their books aren't really in any shape to be going to their CPA. And a lot of you are going, man, I keep meaning to set up QuickBooks, or I keep meaning to figure out how I'm supposed to enter all this stuff and not just have it in a shoebox and all that kind of thing. So it seemed like a good time to do a pop-up with Jerry. He's a recovering CPA, and that one is free and open to the public. And you can get access to that one at CincinnatiRIA.com. So those are our two things for this week. Next week, what's going on is the Summit Help Night on Wednesday night right after this show. That will be, you can get a seat to that at CincinnatiRIA.com. It is Creative Finance Help Night. So let's go ahead and go to the phones and talk to Beth on line one from Pittsburgh. Beth, welcome to Real Life Real Estate. Beth, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me? Hello, hello.
Yes. I think we finally pushed the right button. I can hear you now.
Good.
What can
I do
for you?
I have a question. I'm interested in, I know there's a bunch of different ways to learn real estate, buy, hold, tax liens, wholesaling. There's just so many different ways, and I would like to understand and learn them all. Mm. But specifically at this moment, what I'm interested in is wholesaling land. There was a thing that came out. I live outside of Pittsburgh, and I get the flyers sometimes that you guys send out from your, we're called the RIA. Yep. And there was an event that you did, I think, with a gentleman named Joe McCall, who does wholesaling land. Mm-hmm. I was trying to find out what your thoughts are about that, but also I'm interested in helping people get money back when they get a surplus, when they unfortunately are foreclosed on and it sells for more than what they owe, so they have some money coming to them. And it's my understanding that it's kind of hard to find them and get that money back to them. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
Or how I can learn about that?
Yes, I'm familiar with both strategies, and I'm gonna tell you something, Beth. I deal with hundreds, if not thousands, of real estate investors every year. And by deal with, I mean I talk to them. Talk to them like I'm talking to you. I see them at meetings.
Yeah.
I go network with them, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I have met lots of them who do well wholesaling land. I have met zero of them who do well on the tax surplus thing you're talking about.
You mean like the foreclosure surplus stuff?
Yes. And it's sometimes, okay. Sometimes it's foreclosure. Sometimes it's like bank foreclosure surplus. Sometimes it's tax foreclosure surplus. And just to fill in the people who are listening going, what? It is the case in most parts of the country that if your house goes to any kind of foreclosure sale, whether it's the taxes were foreclosed or the mortgage was foreclosed, if there's any extra money from that sale, you're supposed to get it. So if I owe my bank $100,000 and I can't pay it and my house goes to foreclosure and the winning bidder pays $150,000, that doesn't really mean there's a $50,000 surplus, because there will be fees that, you know, the bank can collect legal fees, there will be taxes, there will be court costs, all that kind of stuff. But maybe there's an extra $25,000. What's supposed to happen is I'm supposed to get that. It's my money, right? I mean, I didn't owe the bank $150,000. I owed the bank and the court and the tax people $125,000. So the rest of the money is supposed to be mine. it appears that a lot of counties do not work really hard to find the person that they owe the extra $25,000 to. Because, I mean, they've moved, right? Their house got foreclosed on. They moved. And, like, you and I could find them because we know how to use the internet, but apparently the counties can't find them. So what ends up happening to that money is eventually it either gets absorbed by the county, or I think in Ohio what has to happen is it goes to the state and it sits in a state fund for a little while and eventually the state takes it. So there's this idea out there that you as an individual person could go find all of these people who have these overages that are due to them. And you could call them up and you can say, hey, I know how I can get you $36,000. And if you'll give me half of it, $10,000, whatever the number is, then I will tell you how to do it. And there's courses all over the place being sold on that. And I know some very smart people who are, I mean, they're not the kind of person to, like, buy a course and stick it up on their shelf and not do anything. And they've really efforted this. They've really, they've gone out and found people. They've, you know, found out what they, where they were. They know how much the surplus is. And they still have not managed to collect any money for one reason or another, because amongst other things, once people know that they've got a tax surplus, they don't need you to help them collect it. They can just go to the county and say, hey, it's me, here's my ID. And they can collect it themselves. So that is a, that's like a sexy idea. Like, I don't have to put a bunch of money up. I just have to put in some effort. But I just don't know. Of the people I know who have done those courses, gone out, tried to do it, I don't know anybody who would say, oh, yeah, and I made $100,000 one year. I may have made a little money once, but wholesaling land is probably the more realistic thing for most people to do. Now, Beth, what I would like to do, because I have a question for you that I would ask anybody who asked me the same question you did. But I need to have Bob put you on hold for a couple of minutes because we need to do a little break for to find out how freaking cold it's going to be in Cincinnati over the next couple of days.
Okay.
And also so that I can remind folks that if you have a question, you can give us a call at 877-772-9658. Text us at 513-201-8249 or send an email to vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox's Question and Answer Week, and I'm talking to Beth from Pittsburgh, who called our answer line at 877-772-9658. Shut up, Vina, that's too many sevens. 877-772-9658. And Beth's question was, well, actually, her initial statement was, there's so many ways to do real estate, and I want to learn all of them. But the two I'm looking at right now are wholesaling land and foreclosure surpluses. And we talked about the whole foreclosure surplus thing. And hey, you know, if you've gone out and done the foreclosure surpluses and you're like, no, man, it worked great for me and I've made all this money. Hey, call me and correct me. I'm opinionated, but I don't have that high an opinion of my own opinion that I'm not willing to listen to somebody who made a bunch of money doing that. But my question, Beth, was why did you pick those two things? Like, what was it that attracted you to say it's going to be A or B?
Mostly, I like the idea of being able to help somebody who was in foreclosure and is struggling, but they possibly have money coming back to them, so that could help them. And the wholesaling land just intrigued me.
Okay. Would it be better to help somebody in foreclosure before they actually go through foreclosure?
Of course. It was just one of those things I heard, and I was like, that's interesting. I guess I tend to follow stuff or check out stuff when it intrigues me.
Yeah, well, there's a whole bunch of ways to work with sellers that are in foreclosure so that they just don't go through foreclosure in the first place. Ranging from, you know, buying their house and leasing it back to them for a while so that they can capture some of their equity, get to stay. A lot of people that I talk to, they're in foreclosure. It's not that they really love the house and are attached to it and it's their forever home and they had hoped to live there until they die. It's, it's that it's really bad for them to have to move right now because they've got a kid in, who's a junior in high school in a really good school. And they don't want to have to move him out of that high school. They want him to be able to graduate, you know? And so, so if they could stay for another couple of years, that would be a real blessing to them, right? And they can get their feet back under them because they don't have the, you know, after 2 years, if you stop the foreclosure by taking over the house, they, in 2 years, they could actually go buy another house potentially because their credit, their credit is improved enough. I feel like you're not beginning with the end in mind as you think about what do I want to do amongst all of these things? Because the, your answer to the one was, I like the idea of helping people. And your answer to the other one was, it intrigued me. You didn't say anything in either case about what these strategies do for you in terms of like what kind of money do they generate?
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things I really don't know, and I'm would just like to learn.
How they work.
I'm gonna
give you an assignment because it's gonna make this decision process as you're going through easier.
Okay.
Because you could, man, you can spend so much time and money learning.
Okay.
I know people have been learning for 10 years and they've never actually done a deal. Because they just keep learning and learning and learning and learning and don't actually, you know, find the thing that I guess that they want to do. So the project is you need to write down how you want your life to be different financially a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And that's going to, I mean, that sounds like just a feel good exercise, but that is not it at all. If you are detailed about that, it is going to pretty much tell you which exit strategies you can ignore for right now because they're not going to get you there and which ones you should be really efforting learning more about. So for instance, if you said, well, in one year, what I want is to have all of my credit cards and college loans paid off. And in 5 years, I want to have enough extra passive income that I can cut down to part-time on my job. And in 10 years, I want to have enough passive income to not have a job. That would be a very, I would say, well, right now you're kind of on the right track with flipping land, although you could flip anything. Because what you need is chunks of cash that I can use to set myself to what I feel like is a financially neutral position where I don't have a bunch of credit card debt and I don't have a bunch of student loans. So flipping something, whether that's land, houses, notes, you know, it's going to be flipping something. And then once you get there, flipping is not going to take you to the stage of having enough passive income to cut down on work because flipping is not passive income. To make money flipping, you got to keep working. You got to keep working on your flipping. So I would say, you know, at that point, I would probably take a look at, you know, what's your credit score? What are your resources? Do you like the idea of running a hospitality business or do you like the idea of running a group home? Because the next thing would be you need to start figuring out how to acquire some real estate that is cash flowing. And all you have to do is pick your exit strategy. And that way, instead of kind of going for a liberal arts degree in real estate, where I'm going to learn a whole bunch of stuff about a whole bunch of stuff, you can more focus on the first thing I need to learn is this because it's going to get me to the financial end that I'm looking for. And then while I'm learning this, I probably also want to be looking into this other thing because I think that I will ultimately go that direction next. Do you belong to Acre in Pittsburgh? Do you belong to Aria Group?
Not at the moment.
Okay. So there's a group in Pittsburgh called Acre, A-C-R-E, that is full of people who have been through the same process. And more importantly, who, when you get to the point where you're like, yep, I like the land flipping thing. I definitely, the more I read about it, the more I think it's awesome. You can walk into a room with those folks and say, hey, who flips land? Who was your mentor? What are the pros and cons of that particular mentor? What do you think the best way to do it here in Pittsburgh is?
Yeah.
But still,
I like that. But as far as the gentleman that I mentioned, do you know him? Do you like what he does?
I do know him, and I know several other people who teach flipping land, and the nature of this radio show being on public radio means I don't really make recommendations like, yeah, do this one, not this one. I would say also look at, because Joe talks about flipping land, I would say also look at Jack Bosch, B-O-S-C-H.
B-O-S-C-H. Okay.
Also look at Kathy Kennebrook, who less flips land than invests in it. I mean, she does flip it, but mostly what she likes to do is like buy it and own it and rent it out to worm farms and people who want to put mobile homes on it and things like that.
Wait, can you just spell her last name?
K-E-N-N-E-B-R-O-O-K. And all three of those folks have been interviewed within the last 2 years on this show. So if you go to realliferealestate.com and just there's a indexing thing and you just type in land, you will find interviews with all of them.
realliferealestate.com.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Beth, how did you find out about the show?
I got an email.
Hmm. Interesting. So we have had some contact at some other point in time for some reason. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for your call.
Have a good day.
You too. If you would like to also get an email when there's a show coming up, I've talked to people quite a bit who are like, oh man, I really wanted to listen to the show the other day because I knew you had this person on that I was really looking forward to, but I missed it. We do send out a reminder email every week. And what you do is you go to realliferealestate.com. There's a little thing that says, want more goddess. If you fill in your name and email there, then you will get that email. Let's see. I guess we probably should take a break right now since we don't have any callers on the line. It's question and answer week. 877-772-9658 is the number to call if you have any real estate related questions, or you can send an email to vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. It's question and answer week, and we're going to the email inbox at vinoradio@gmail.com for a question from Darius, who says, we've recently learned about Subject 2 and wanted to get your take on finding a primary home using this route. What things should we consider? A lot of title companies and people we are close with claim AI data scraping and other factors will crack down hard on Subject 2 going forward. Not sure if this is true or not. Would hate to get a home and have an issue with it being Subject 2. What do you think? Want to protect the family but find a place to call home? Ah, Darius. Yeah, there is this thing going around about how AI is looking for actually very particular situations, which is situations where a property changes hands and then a power of attorney is filed with the bank. And I've been seeing that for a few months, and it might be true. I haven't heard a whole bunch of people saying that there's been an increase in those loans being called due. But the people who are being taught to file a power of attorney with the lender after a Subject 2 are, in my opinion, being taught wrong in the first place. Subject 2 is the area in which there is the most highest volume of incorrect but expensive teaching going on. it would not surprise me if there was some crackdown on subject two, just because the way it is being taught, it is practically guaranteed to result in a higher default rate. And I think what banks really care about is the default rate, not the is somebody else making the payments instead of the person who's supposed to be making the payments. It has gotten so bad that in, I don't think it's next month, I think it's the month after that, the Cincinnati RIA National online meeting on the third Thursday is called How to Do Subject 2 Wrong. And it's going to be a couple of people, including an attorney, talking about this wrong stuff that's being taught, that it's not so much that it's illegal. It's that it's extremely unethical and impractical. It's just going to cause problems. It's going to cause exactly what you're afraid of, which is you and your family moving to this nice new home that you like, and then the bank calls the loan due. So AI data scraping, maybe it's true. I have not seen a, like I said, I haven't seen a big increase in the number of loans called due. I'm not sure that even if they, I mean, the bank not only has to find out that you bought it subject to the existing loan, they have to care. And it's not, I keep saying bank, like that's a thing. The servicer, who's actually the one who is deciding whether the loan has been taken over, has to tell the investor, who has to care. And the investor is often Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, who is not a person who has taken millions of dollars worth of loans and securitized them. It's a long frickin'... This whole idea of banks care about whether you took over somebody else's loan goes back to the days when banks made loans with depositor money and then kept those loans and used them for investment. And that has not been the world since like the late 80s. So, yeah. The other thing is, though, Darius, there are ways of getting out of the whole the loan got called due thing. Like, I don't know, refinance, get a partner involved, this is your own house, so it's going to change your options a little bit, but give it back to the owner, get it back to the borrower, say I'm sorry, bank, I didn't realize I couldn't do this, give it back to the borrower, and then lease option it back from the borrower so you can keep living there and buy it when you're ready to get your own loan. I bought the last house I owned subject to the existing loan. It was the nicest house I'd ever lived in up to that point. Made it really easy that I could step into somebody else's I think it was a 5.2% loan when interest rates were 7.5%. Made the payment very affordable for me. And I went through a whole cycle of, I owned that house for probably 10 or 12 years, just continuing to pay the loan. And then I decided to remodel the kitchen and the bathroom, and I put about another $25,000 into the house. And then I was like, I want to get my money back out, so I ended up refinancing it. But by that time, rates had dropped below 5.2. So it all worked out just fine. You are right to be alert. You are right to want to make sure you're doing it right in a way that's not going to hurt you or the seller or the lender. But I personally, I'm not worried enough about this whole AI is finding out that my property that I've owned for 5 years has somebody else's name on the loan, and now they're going to call the loan due. I'll worry about it when I start to see it become an actual problem. Thank you for your email, Darius. If you have a question for Real Life Real Estate, you can send it to email at vinaradio@gmail.com, or you can give us a call at 877-772-9658. Next question comes from Elaine and Ray. And I know this because the first line is, we are Elaine and Ray of Serendipity E&R Properties, and we have a few questions. What type of information should be brought to a prospective investor? I assume you're saying that you're looking for like a private money person to invest in your deal, and you're asking what kind of questions they would want the answer to. It depends a little bit on the kind of deal that you're looking. Like if it's a quick turn, what I want to know is, What do you think the ARV is? What do you think the repair costs are? What repairs are you planning on doing? How long do you want the money? How much experience do you have doing this kind of deal? If it's a longer term investment, I want to know things like, what's the rent? What are the taxes and insurance? What are the taxes and insurance going to be after you buy it? Are there repair costs that are needed in here too? And if so, how much is that? How much experience do you have managing these properties? I mean, it's not like making a bank application, because I don't want to see your last 2 years tax returns, at least not at this point. I don't need a list of all the properties you own and all that kind of stuff, because I am just evaluating the investment. So many of the same things that you would use to evaluate whether you wanted to do that investment. Is there a formula used to make sure every deal is profitable? I don't know, guys. What day is it? The formula that I could have used and been pretty sure that any deal was going to be profitable in 2021 is different than the formula would be today. The formula for a property that I'm going to wholesale is different from the formula of a property I'm going to retail is different from the formula of a property I'm going to use as a long-term rental. I usually evaluate anything that's not going to be a flip in at least two different ways. I want to do the after repaired value, the repair costs, do some kind of a formula to say I'm getting some equity, and then also look at the thing that you are, that you mentioned next. You said not just the capital gains or working the number for expenses and net profits. What do you mean not just? That's the whole thing. working the numbers for expenses and net profits and working the numbers correctly. That's an important piece of that. That is your formula. Unfortunately, there's not a, I can't say, okay, so guys, seriously, secretly, the formula is R times 6/10 of R minus P, where R equals, no, there's nothing like that. I have so many spreadsheets that people are buying me sweatshirts that say this calls for a spreadsheet. Because every property I'm like doing an evaluation on. What order is best to refi a property or get pre-approved? Which would impact credit scores the most or would make lenders think you're overextending? So what you're saying is I'm getting to the point where I need to refi my property. Should I get pre-approved first or should I just go straight to the, refi? The answer is for pre-approvals, they don't usually do a hard pull on your credit. I always ask too, when I say I want to get pre-approved, I say, are you going to do a hard pull? Because if they're going to do a hard pull, I don't want that until I'm actually convinced that they're the ones I'm going to go with because they've got the best rates and terms for me. So I think it's a good idea to get pre-approved as long as there's not going to be a hard pull on your credit. How do we find deals without risking our own money or credit? Well, it doesn't generally cost any money or credit to find deals. It costs money or credit potentially to buy deals. Is it really that you don't want to, quote, risk your own money or credit? Because if you really consider it, it's a risk, then why would you want to put anybody else's money or credit into it either? I think what you're saying is we want to find deals where we don't have to use our own money or credit. And the answer to that is don't stop trying to find deals. You're not looking for deals. You're looking for problems. You're looking for people who have problems that you can solve. And particularly if you can solve them creatively, that's where you get in without your own money or credit. Sit down and have real discussions with people about what outcome are you looking for here? What would be a win-win for you? Oh, you say if you could stop the foreclosure and live here another 2 years with your son, that would be a win-win for you. So it sounds like if I made up your back payments and took over your loan, and then I was able to lease you the property for 2 years at a price you can afford, and then you can, after the kids graduated, you can move on. It sounds like does that sound like a good solution? Sounds like what you're telling me you need. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I need. Okay, now I just have to figure out how to get the money to catch up your payments and maybe make up a little negative number every month on the difference between the payments I'm making for you and the payments you can afford to make for me? And the answer to that is a partner, still creative finance. That's a subject to plus a partner. I would study creative strategies if I were you. And actually at Fundrive, which is a month away, I guess.
Yeah, right? March.
March the 4th, 11th, something like that.
Yeah.
You will have an opportunity to pledge to the station and get yourself a creative finance weekend, the likes of which you have never seen before. For investors, what are the usual requirements? Is this typically a lengthy process? Boy, that is not a question I know the answer to, because I don't understand. For what does that mean? For investors doing what? I'm going to guess getting a loan, maybe? If you have a W-2 job and not a whole bunch of properties and not real complicated tax returns, it's not a lengthy process. Like, to get a hard money loan, if you have your ducks in a row and you've got your paperwork together, you can usually get a hard money loan in like 10 days. That's a fix and flip loan, though, and you're going to have to take that out in 6 months and go to a DSCR loan, and those are a little bit higher documentation, but that's still like 20 to 30 days. If you have a super complicated, you know, I've got 6 businesses and no job and 90 properties that I have to make profit and loss statements for, it takes a long time. Last time I got a bank loan, which was only a year ago, and only because I was trying to buy a personal residence, it took a solid 3.5 months to get that thing to happen, because of just, it's always one more piece of paper. But then my friends who have jobs, and they're like, well, here's my, you know, W-2, and here's my 2 rental properties. They're like, what are you talking about? It takes 3 weeks to get a loan. I'm like, okay, good. In your world, that's the way it is. So hopefully that was your question. And thank you guys for your emails, and keep listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week. We're going to take a quick break, 877-772-9658. If you have a question you'd like to call in with, or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I am your host, Vina Jones Cox. It is question and answer week, which means there is no real topic except for your questions. You maybe could, if you jumped on the phone right now, you could maybe get one in by phone at 877-772-9658. Otherwise, the way to do it is to send an email at vinaradio@gmail.com. You can actually send an email there anytime, because lots of times we kind of save up questions for question and answer weeks. Have an email here from Anne, who I'm thinking might be a first-time listener, because, boy, I just got so many questions from Anne about the email I sent, where I was talking about the note class that's happening on Thursday that you can go to it by going to coreyrocks.com, and the bookkeeping class also on Thursday at cincinnatirea.com. So I'm going to knock down as many of these as I can. What is a note? What is the process to wrap a note in the first or second position? Who decides who's in first and second position? A note is the payment instrument that comes along with a mortgage that says, this is how much I owe and for how long and at what interest rate and so on. The process of wrapping a note, boy, that's a whole show. In fact, if you go to realliferealestate.com and look up wraps, you will find that we've done several shows on how to do that, because it is it's a little bit of an intermediate to advanced kind of thing. What decides who's in first or second position is, well, okay, so legally what decides that is the order in which those mortgages are recorded at the courthouse. But practically who decides that is generally someone has decided they want to be in first position, and someone has decided they want to be the wrap. Someone it feels better about a lower rate of return and being in a secure position, and the other one wants the higher rate of return and is willing to take less security for it. Can retirement funds be used to fund a note? Yes, if they are self-directed. go to realliferealestate.com, put IRAs or retirement plans in the search, and you will find 5 or 6 interviews with different IRA custodians about how that can be used. It's only can be done if you have a true self-directed IRA. What is the average or safe amount to withdraw from retirement funds? You do not withdraw from the retirement funds. The retirement funds buy the investment. Like, you don't take the money out and you go buy the investment. The retirement fund buys the investment. And again, that's why it has to be a self-directed retirement fund. What is the average or safe amount? That is not a question I can answer. There is not an average amount. The safe amount would depend on how safe the investment is. So you need to learn about notes before you start investing any funds, retirement or otherwise, in them. What are land contracts? They are very common in the Midwest and not necessarily that common in the rest of the country. Way of financing a property. They're a little bit different than a note in a mortgage, in that if I am quote buying a house on a land contract, I make payments of principal, interest, and taxes and insurance, but the deed doesn't come to me until I've made the last payment. How to set up an entity. If needed, a lawyer or a CPA. I would definitely, before I even thought about what entity to set up, I would talk to my lawyer and my CPA and say, here's what I plan to do with this entity. Which kind do I need? And they're probably going to say an LLC. And if you want it set up right with the right operating agreement, you probably do need to have an attorney do that. Can an investor have a permanent residence in a property for 2 to 7 years and then move out and rent it? Yes. Or 1 year or 900 years if they're Methuselah. There's no like rule about something magical about it being 2 to 7 years. Now there are, if you buy a property with an FHA or VA loan, those often do say that you must live in them for 2 years because it was a homeowner loan that you got. But then after that, yes, you can move out and rent the property as long as you don't care that you will not be able to buy your next house with an FHA or VA loan. Is there a 2 to 5 year rule of thumb tax advantage? The tax advantage you're talking about is called the 121 allowance. And what it says is if you live in and own a property for 2 of the last 5 years and you sell that property, you can collect a profit of up to $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married and you and your spouse both own the property, and not pay taxes on that. So you have to live in it 2 of the last 5 years. So like if you moved in today and you moved out in 2 years, you would have 3 years to sell it at that profit. You'd have 3 years to hold it as an investment property and sell it and keep that profit. Can you explain capital gains and losses? Can investors have a gain 1 year and a loss the following 2 years? Well, the answer to part two is yes. You can have a gain 1 year and a loss the next year every single year. Capital gains that's another whole show. Go on Real Life Real Estate, Google Ellsworth, or put Ellsworth in or higher. We've done a number of tax shows where a lot of that more complicated stuff was explained. So what do you think, Bob? Can we talk to Russ or not?
3 minutes.
Okay. Let's go ahead and try and talk to Russ, who's calling from Connecticut. Russ, we have 3 minutes.
Hi. No problem. Thank you. I had a friend I know of a couple of weeks ago or a week said he's in foreclosure and in Connecticut, and we're right outside Hartford. And he didn't really share much except to say he's been in kind of they call it a forbearance for about 9 months, for about a year. 9 months of a year. And still has maybe a couple months left. And if you could, wouldn't mind refreshing, it's been years since I've done this, especially particularly in Connecticut, anything I should know.
So he's in a true forbearance. The bank is saying you do not have to make payments right now? Or is he in a modification where they just changed the amount of payment he had to make so he could afford it?
I think he said forbearance is what he said. And we didn't get too deep, and I'm about to have my next conversation with him. We spoke last week.
Okay, yeah, we'll find out. Because if he's in a true forbearance, I mean, I haven't seen very many true forbearances in the past 15 years. What that means is I think what he's telling you is he's coming to the end of it, and he will have to start making payments again, and he may not be able to do that.
So, yeah, I don't think he does. And his wife is dealing with stage 3 cancer, or 3-4 cancer, so it's really been, between those two, very stressful, as he's looking for work and other incomes.
So let's have a conversation with him, find out exactly what's going on, because the next step is going to depend on what's going on. What I keep running across over and over again is people who got loan modifications where they were given the opportunity to take all of their back payments and kind of move them to the back of the loan in the form of a second mortgage that doesn't have to be paid on or paid off until the first mortgage is paid off. And even with the modification, they still can't afford the payments, so they're back in foreclosure again. That's what I keep running across. And those are potentially good subject twos. Now, this is a friend of yours, so obviously, your main concern here is how do I help him get to whatever's next for him in the way that is as dignified as possible and, as low a loss as possible. And if I can interfere in some way that makes it profitable for me, too, great. And if not, I still want to help.
Right.
So let's find out what's going on, Russ,
because he doesn't, we haven't known each other too long or too well, and he's reticent to give that. And I'm saying, well, I need to know what to recommend. So.
Okay. All right. Well, let us know what happens after the conversation. Okay, Russ, we gotta go.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Yeah. You've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.